Have you ever been there trying to get that, perfect golden caramel for a dessert? And it either ends up too pale or, oh, worse, completely burnt and bitter.
Oh, yeah, definitely been there.
Or, like when you strike a match, have you ever stopped to think what exactly makes it burst into flame so reliably? Well, these moments, they aren't just kitchen accidents or, simple fire starting. They're actually these amazing everyday chemical transformations happening right under our noses.
Absolutely. Chemistry in action.
So today we're doing a deep dive into this really fascinating world of chemical reactions. We've got some great insights here from our source, chem-onc0441.pdf, that we're going to explore.
Yeah, it looks like a good one.
Our mission really is to unpack what a chemical reaction actually is, how you can spot one, and what's really going on with the atoms when these changes happen. We'll even get into how chemists like talk about these changes and why understanding it might just change how you see things every day.
And seeing things differently is key, I think, because chemical reactions, they aren't just abstract ideas for a lab. They're fundamental. They drive change everywhere in the physical world. Understanding them isn't really about memorizing definitions. It's more about grasping the principles behind, well, everything from how your body digests food to why metal rusts. It's about the fabric of how stuff interacts and changes.
Okay, so to really get a handle on chemical reactions, we probably need to start with a key difference: physical change versus chemical
Yeah,
change.
crucial distinction.
Right, so a physical change,
Yeah.
this is where a substance might look different, maybe feel different, but its actual core identity, that stays the same. Think about like compressed butane gas in a lighter. You press the button, it expands really fast, its volume changes hugely, but it's still butane, just spread out more.
Exactly.
We see this constantly, right? Ice melting to water, water boiling to steam, sugar dissolving in tea. The actual stuff hasn't fundamentally changed.
Precisely. It's like, taking Lego bricks apart and maybe scattering them. You still have the exact same bricks, just in a different arrangement or place. The molecules are still molecules of butane or water or sugar.
Okay, but a chemical change.
Yeah.
Now that's where the Legos get totally broken down and rebuilt into something completely new,
It's
guys.
just the perfect analogy. New toys from the old bricks.
And that's where it gets really interesting. Chemical changes are all about forming new substances.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the butane. When it hits the hot nozzle of, say, a kitchen torch, it doesn't just expand.
No.
It ignites. It undergoes a chemical reaction, and it produces completely different things: carbon dioxide, gas, and water vapor. It's not butane anymore.
Totally transformed.
And that reaction, that chemical change, releases the energy you need to caramelize sugar, that first thing we talked about. And the caramelizing sugar, that's also a chemical reaction. It's changing the sugar's surface, its taste, its very makeup.
And that process, where one or more substances, the reactants, undergo this fundamental chemical change to produce one or more completely new substances, the product, that's what we call a chemical reaction. It's a total molecular makeover.
Okay, so if new substances are being formed, how can we, like, play detective and spot when this is happening?
Ah, the clues.
Our
Yes.
source points out four main clues. First up, an unexpected change in color. So imagine you have a clear liquid silver nitrate solution, and you add a yellow liquid potassium chromate solution. Suddenly, bam, you get this solid, bright red stuff, silver chromate. That's a pretty strong hint something new just appeared.
Very visual cue, that one.
Second clue, energy is released or absorbed. Like with the butane torch, you get that intense blue flame, you feel the heat. That's energy being released.
Just a thermic reaction.
Right. But then think about the sugar caramelizing. It turns dark brown, indicating it's absorbing energy to undergo that change.
Endothermic, potentially, or at least driven by the applied heat causing the reaction.
Yes. Third clue, a gas is produced. Now, this one needs a bit of care, right? Because boiling water makes steam, which is a gas.
But that's just a physical change. Same substance, different state.
Exactly. We're looking for gas produced without boiling. Like when you drop an Alka-Seltzer tablet in water and it fizzes, that's new gas being formed chemically.
Good example, carbon dioxide, usually.
And the fourth clue, a precipitate forms. That sounds technical, but it just means a solid suddenly appears when you mix two liquids. Like our red silver chromate example earlier, that solid dropping out of the solution is a precipitate.
That's right, an insoluble solid formed from a solution during a chemical reaction.
Okay, four clues. But here's the catch, isn't there?
Ah, yes, the big caveat. Critically important. None of these four clues on their own are absolute 100% proof that a chemical reaction has occurred.
Really? Not even the color change or the precipitate.
Nope. They are strong indicators, very strong sometimes, but not definitive. Think about adding food coloring to water that's a color change, but no reaction. Or sometimes temperature changes can make things precipitate out physically. The only way to be completely certain is to actually collect the product and test it, analyze it, and confirm scientifically that it is indeed a new substance with different properties.
Okay, that makes sense. So if they're not foolproof, why even bother with the clues?
Because they're incredibly useful. They're like smoke detectors. They don't prove there's a dangerous fire, but they strongly suggest something significant might be happening and that you absolutely need to investigate further. They guide your observation and your scientific inquiry.
Got it. So they point you in the right direction. Okay, so we've talked about what we see, but what's actually going on down at the tiny level, the molecular level?
Yeah.
How are the atoms doing their dance during these changes?
The atomic choreography. Let's take hydrogen peroxide, H2O2. You know, the stuff in the brown bottle.
Yeah, for cuts sometimes. Yeah. Or bleaching hair.
That's the one. If you just leave it, or sometimes if you add certain things, you'll see it bubble. That bubbling, is it breaking down, decomposing into plain old water, H2O, and a colorless gas?
How do we know what gas?
Well, there's a classic test. If you take a wooden splint, light it, blow it out so it's just glowing red, and then stick that glowing splint into the gas being produced.
What happens?
It relights, bursts back into flame. That's the definitive test for oxygen gas, O2.
Wow. Okay, so hydrogen peroxide turns into water and oxygen.
Exactly. And what's really neat is how you can influence how fast this happens. If you add a pinch of manganese oxide, it's just a black powder, MnO2, the bubbling becomes much, much faster, almost violent sometimes.
So that black powder makes it react faster. Does it get used up?
That's the fascinating part. No, the manganese oxide isn't a reactant, meaning it doesn't get consumed, and it's not a product, meaning it isn't formed. It just makes the reaction happen quicker. We call that a catalyst.
A catalyst, like a chemical helper.
Kind of like a chemical matchmaker, yeah. It lowers the energy needed for the reaction to start, helps the hydrogen peroxide molecules break their bonds and rearrange their atoms more easily, but it doesn't become part of the final product itself.
So what's happening to the atoms then?
It's all about rearrangement. For every two molecules of hydrogen peroxide, H2O2, that react, the bonds inside them break. The hydrogen and oxygen atoms then reshuffle and form new bonds to make two molecules of water, H2O, and one molecule of oxygen, O2.
So the atoms themselves aren't changing, just who they're bonded to.
Precisely. And this leads us straight to one of the absolute cornerstones of chemistry, the law of conservation of mass.
Okay. Sounds important. What does it mean for our atoms?
It means that matter, atoms, cannot be created or destroyed in a chemical reaction. Every single atom you start with, all the hydrogens, all the oxygens in the hydrogen peroxide must still be there at the end, just rearranged into water and oxygen molecule.
No atoms lost, no atoms gained.
Exactly. They just change partners in the bands. So the total mass of your reactants, the stuff you start with, has to equal the total mass of your products, the stuff you end up with. It's like perfect accounting on an atomic scale.
Wow. So atoms are conserved, mass is conserved. It all balances out.
It absolutely has to. This isn't just theory. It's why we can calculate reaction yields, design industrial processes efficiently. It all relies on knowing that every atom is accounted for. Nothing just appears or disappears into thin air.
Okay, speaking of accounting.
Yeah.
Chemists need a way to write all this down clearly, right? Not just drawing atoms dancing.
Right. We need a language.
Yeah.
And we use two main types of descriptions, word equations and chemical equations.
Word equations sound straightforward.
They are. Pretty simple. You just write the names of the reactants on the left side of an arrow and the names of the products on the right. So for our example, it would be hydrogen peroxide, then an arrow, water plus oxygen. Sometimes you write conditions like the catalyst over the arrow, so hydrogen peroxide, MnO2 catalyst, water plus oxygen. You might also add lime plus energy if energy is released.
Simple enough.
Yeah.
But I guess it doesn't tell the whole story.
Not really. It lacks detail. That's where chemical equations come in. They give you much more information. They use the actual chemical formulas for reactants and products.
Like H2O2 and H2O.
Exactly. And they also tell you the physical state of each substance using little symbols in parentheses, like S for solid, L for liquid, G for gas. And there's one more common one, AQ, which means aqueous dissolved in water.
Okay, so what would the chemical equation for the hydrogen peroxide reaction look like?
It would be 2H2O2AQ, meaning two molecules of hydrogen peroxide dissolved in water, then the arrow with MnO2 catalyst written above it, yielding 2H2OL, two molecules of liquid water, plus O2G, one molecule of oxygen gas, and maybe plus energy.
Wait, where do the twos come from? In front of H2O2 and H2O?
Good question. Those are called coefficients. They tell us the ratio in which the substances react and are formed. It means two molecules of H2O2 react to produce two molecules of H2O and one molecule of O2. If there's no number, like in front of O2, it implies a coefficient of one.
And those coefficients are linked to that conservation of mass thing.
Directly. When the coefficients are chosen correctly, the equation is called balanced. A balanced chemical equation means you have the exact same number of each type of atom on both sides of the arrow.
Let me see. On the left in 2H2O2, we have 2x2E4 hydrogens and 2x2E4 oxygens.
Right.
On the right in 2H2O, we have 2x2E4 hydrogens and 2x1 equals 2 oxygens. Plus in O2, we have another 2 oxygens. So 4 hydrogens and 2 plus 2 equals 4 oxygens on the right, too.
Perfect. See, four hydrogens on both sides, four oxygens on both sides. The atoms are conserved. The equation is balanced.
It's like a mathematical proof that mass is conserved for that reaction.
That's exactly what it is. Balancing equations ensures we obey that fundamental law. There are strategies for doing it. You usually start with a skeleton equation with just the formulas, then you adjust the coefficients, often tackling atoms that appear in only one place first, maybe leaving single elements to last. Sometimes polyatomic ions that stay intact can be balanced as a whole unit.
Like in the source example with sodium and oxygen making sodium oxide, they show 4Na plus O2A2 A2 Fe. That balancing makes sure the Na and O atoms match up on both sides.
Precisely. Four sodiums and two oxygens on the left, and in two units in A2SU, you also have four sodiums and two oxygens, balanced.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. But, beyond the theory and the equations, how does this stuff show up in a way that's, well, maybe more fun or visual?
You might be thinking of demonstrations like the classic elephant toothpaste.
Yes, I've seen videos of that huge foam volcano, right?
That's the one. And our source actually describes a mini investigation doing just that. It involves mixing hydrogen peroxide, but using different concentrations, like 3%, 6%, maybe even 12%, with some liquid dish soap and a bit of dry yeast.
Yeast, like for baking bread.
Yep. Yeast contains an enzyme called catalase, which acts as a fantastic catalyst for the decomposition of hydrogen peroxide. Just like the manganese oxide we talked about, only it's biological. The soap is just there to trap the oxygen gas being produced.
Ah, so the yeast speeds up the H2O2 breakdown, making oxygen gas, and the soap catches it to make foam.
Exactly. You see this massive, rapid production of foam, which is basically soap bubbles filled with oxygen. You could even test the gas coming off with a glowing splint, and it would relight. It's a very dramatic chemical reaction.
And using different concentrations, like 3% versus 12%.
That demonstrates a key concept: reaction rate. The more concentrated the hydrogen peroxide, the more reactant molecules are packed into the same volume, so the faster the reaction happens. The 12% solution would produce foam much more quickly and vigorously than the 3% solution.
Okay, that connects back to real life too. You mentioned
Yeah,
hair bleaching.
right. Hair salons often use higher concentrations of hydrogen peroxide, sometimes called developer, precisely because they need a faster, stronger reaction to lift the color out of hair effectively.
Which also means more caution needed.
Absolutely. Higher concentrations mean faster reactions, potentially more heat generated, and greater chemical reactivity. So, understanding the chemistry isn't just academic, it directly impacts safety procedures and how effectively products work in places like salons, or even when you're using cleaning products at home. It matters.
So let's wrap this up a bit. What's the big picture here?
Well, I think we've seen that chemical reactions are these fundamental processes where entirely new substances get formed. It all happens because atoms are rearranging themselves, breaking old bonds, and forming new ones.
And we've got clues to help us spot these reactions: color changes, energy release or absorption, gas production, precipitates, even though we need solid proof to be certain.
Right. And we know that underpinning all of this is the law of conservation of mass atoms aren't created or destroyed, just reshuffled.
Which is why chemists use balanced chemical equations, that special language, to precisely describe what's happening and make sure all the atoms are accounted for.
Exactly. From caramel to elephant toothpaste, it's all about atoms doing this intricate dance.
Remember, these chemical changes are happening constantly all around you, in the kitchen, when you cook, maybe when metal rusts outside, even inside your own body as you breathe. Observing those clues, the unexpected color, the heat, the fizzing, They're windows into this hidden atomic world.
Absolutely. Keep your eyes open for them.
So, for your own provocative thought this week, think about another everyday change. Maybe rust forming on an old bike or fruit ripening on a counter. Based on what we've talked about today, what clues might suggest these are chemical reactions?
Yeah, that.
And just for fun, what new substances do you think might be forming in those processes?
Good one. Gets you thinking about the chemistry hidden in plain sight.
Keep observing, keep questioning, and keep learning.